Right. Morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Ches in Shabbos. So, learning we do this morning should be Le'ilui Nishmas Moshe Ben Aryeh Lehi. We are off on Zayin Amud Beis, and we have just a little bit left to go on the Amud. Chorei Rishus Yachid was the topic that we last finished off with yesterday. Cracks and crevices of Rishus Yachid and cracks and crevices of Rishus Rabim. So that when I walk through a Rishus Yachid, so all the holes in the house are considered part of the Rishus Yachid. If I deposit anything in the hole, so it's like depositing something in the Rishus Yachid itself. What about Chorei Rishus Rabim? What about cracks and crevices, the holes of Rishus Rabim? Now the Rishus Rabim is a street. So it's a little bit strange to talk about cracks and crevices in the Rishus Rabim. And we're not really speaking about the ditches in the ground of the street. That's only going to make you trip. Presumably what we're talking about over here is that the street has like a wall running alongside it. Like we've been discussing for the past week now, the street runs right by houses. And so there's like a little hole on the outside of the house, so that somebody easily who's walking through the Rishus Rabim can drop something into that hole or place something in that hole. So Chor Rishus Rabim, what status does that have? So that's subject to a machlok between Abai and Rava. Abai was of the position that Chor Rishus Rabim is Kirishus Rabim. It's just like a Rishus Rabim, and Rava disagrees, and Rava says, no, it's not like a Rishus Rabim. And so they're going back and forth, and this is where we left off yesterday, Tanan. We learned in the Mishnah. Okay, so we are going to try to prove, disprove Abaye or Rava. So Tanan, we are on. Tanan, we are in the middle of Zayin Amud Beis.
If Abaye holds a Chor Rishus Rabim, what does he hold?
Right, Tzida Rishus Rabim. Well, Tzida Rishus Rabim is, I guess, more used. I mean, Chor Rishus Rabim is not talking about the actual street itself. It's talking about a hole in the wall that's adjacent to the street. Something like that. A nook. It may not, in other words, it may not affect whatsoever their position on Tzida Rishus Rabim, because Tzida Rishus Rabim is the actual street itself. Tanan, we learned in the Mishnah, Azorg Dal Amos Bekoso. You heard this Mishnah once before. You're going to hear it again. This Mishnah, it gets a lot of airtime. You throw an item, four Amos, against the wall. So now, and you threw in the Rishus Rabim, some Lamala Mayud, so if the item, which I'll give away the secret, it's a sticky item. It's like a sticky fig. So if it's stuck to the wall above, ten tfachim kezorg ba'avir, it's like you threw it in the air. Because like we've said already now a number of times, anything above ten tfachim is considered makom patur, that just simple airspace, dead air. So you didn't violate the malacha of hotzah, or in this case, being mavir dal amos. Lamantam yutfachim, but if it's below ten tfachim kezorg ba'arutz, that's like throwing on the ground. That is a mishnah. Now, what does that mean? Vahavinamba, the Gemara says, now when we're discussing that mission, we ask the following question. Mike is Ogbaritz. Vahalonach, I don't understand. Where did it land? Meaning I'm throwing it against a vertical wall. There's something called gravity. At least I've heard of such a rumor. Where did this item land? Now Rav Yochanan's answer is very simple. They're talking about a sticky fruit where it's stuck to the side of the wall. Now, that is so far a Mishnah and Rav Yochanan's understanding of the Mishnah. Now the Gemara discusses. Now, if you want to tell me that, like Abaye, that the nooks and the crannies in the wall that are adjacent to Rishus Rabim have the status of the Rishus Rabim, so why did Rav Yochanan have to give such a fancy example and a fancy analysis of the Mishnah? Just simply say that I threw it on the wall and just simply say that there was a hole in the wall and I threw it into the hole in the wall. Why can't we give such a simple example, at least according to Abaye? So this is the Gemara's question. Now, could be that Abaye would, every time he learns the Mishnah, that's how he would learn the Mishnah. But the question really is, why didn't Rav Yochanan give such an explanation? So, Zimna Mishan Leishan Yitzur V'chefetz Demahad V'asim. So, the first answer that I would give is, well, and I guess this is the Gemara now defending Abaye. Well, the first answer I would give is that he would always bounce back. And you'd never really make it into the hole, in the wall. And Zimna Mishan Lebikostales Bechor. Or I could also suggest to you that we're talking about where the wall doesn't have a hole in it. And me my, and I'll tell you why I could say that. Meaning, in other words, when the Mishnah gives the case, there usually is a little bit of wiggle room in terms of developing what exactly is the case. But here I'm telling you that this particular wall did not have holes in it. Why? Midiktani Reisha. Because look at the beginning of the Mishnah. Zarek lamalam yitvachim. If I throw it above 10 tvachim, because zarek ba'avir. It looks like I threw it in the air. V'isakadach because odis bechor. Now, where did it land? Again, same question. I'm throwing it on a wall. It's a vertical wall. And it landed above 10 tefachim. Where did it land? If you want to suggest, like what you're trying to do, that there's a hole in the wall, Ha-nach-bechor. So you didn't throw it in the air, it actually landed in the wall. Now what do you want to suggest to me? Well, here it's not a Rishos HaYachid because it's not Makam Dal Adal. Remember the dimension of Rishos HaYachid? 10 tefachim high, 4x4 area. So maybe this hole in the wall is smaller than 4x4. So therefore, it's not a Rishos Yachid. V'am Rav Yehuda, v'am Rav Yechiya, zarek l'malam yutfachim, v'hacha v'nacha b'chor, kol shehu, even if the hole is any amount, banu l'machlokas Rameir v'Rabbanan. So now we touch on a very fundamental debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, which is Rav Meir savar chokik in l'hashlim. Rav Meir holds that we are chokik in l'hashlim, meaning, even though the hole is only of a certain size, but if there's more room to carve out, we in our minds, halachically, legally, carve out the rest of it. This is a principle known as Chokik in Lahashlin. You're going to see it again in Erevin. You'll see it a couple of times throughout Shas. So Rameir's position is very simple. In other words, it's a certain creativity.
So you make it happen.
You don't have to do it.
Make it mentally.
Mentally, it's there. Meaning as long as there's more space to carve out, so then we're going to look at it as if it's already carved out. Chokik in Lahashlin. Basically, it's a looking at the potential. And the Chachamim say, no, we're not Chokik Lahashlin, but the Gemara assumes that we have a Mishnah over there. And that Mishnah presumably goes like Rav Meir. In fact, Rashi writes, Stam Mishnah K'Rav Meir. So therefore, you have to assume that even if the hole is any size, as long as there's potentially more room, so that we're gonna carve out the space, and therefore it's gonna be a Rishos HaYachid. So Allah Shmamina because the lights bechor Shmamina. So therefore I'm only left to the conclusion that it's a kosel that does not have a chor, it has no holes in it. That's true above 10 tefachim, that's true below 10 tefachim. And that's why Rav Yochanan gave the answer of Dvela Shmena. It was a sticky fruit that stuck to the side of the wall. But Abai would tell you, in my defense, it could very well be that had there been a hole in the wall, had he thrown it into the hole, I'd be right, you would be chayef. Okay. So again, we left off now. That's the end of that discussion. So chorei rishos hayachid, the holes in a rishos hayachid are like a rishos hayachid. That goes undisputed. Chorei rishos harabim, that's machlokes between Abai and Rava, based on the general and our general rules of Abai machlokes Abai and Rava. We normally go like Rava, except for six exceptions. This not being one of them.
What's
Stam Mishnah K'Rav Meir? When you have an anonymous Mishnah.
Anywhere in Shas.
That's the rule. Anonymous Mishnah, Stam Mishnah K'Rav Meir. Now, like with every rule, there's going to be exceptions, but that's a general rule.
We follow Rav Meir on
the Chokin Lahashlin, not necessarily. It just happens to be that when we're going to explain the Mishnah, we're going to explain it like Rabbi Meir. Gufa Amar Rav Chista, Natz Kanem Bershus HaYachin, Vezark V'Nachal Gabav. Okay, let's go back to a point that we made earlier. So remember, we say once you have a Rishos HaYachid, that's it. Ola L'Rakia keeps going up. So if I throw an item in a Rishos HaYachid, meaning I throw it from a Rishos HaRabim into a Rishos HaYachid, V'zark v'nach al gabav afil gavah me'ama, and there's a pole in the Rishos HaYachid, and the pole goes up even 100 ama. It's very high in the air, that's about 200 feet in the air. So that's a good throw. So you would be chayv im nesha Rishos HaYachid ola ad L'Rakia, because Rishos HaYachid goes up. This is a ruling that was given to us by Rav Chista. What's the only problem with this ruling? Meaning, so far so good. Nothing that drastic about this ruling. The Gemara picks up on one particular issue, which is Lamer Rav Chista Damer Karebi. When it landed on the top of the pole, what did it actually land on? So somehow you got the item to balance nice and neatly on the very top of the pole. You remember what we've been asking now a number of times throughout this first nine blot of Shabbos, in order for it to be an Akira, in order for it to be a Hanacha, it needs to be on Makom Dalet al Dalet. It has to be on a landing of at least minimum 4x4. So when it landed on the top of the pole, so granted it landed in a Rosh Hashanah, but it didn't land on any platform. So how does that work? So Lema Rechista Da'amar Karebi. So maybe Rechista holds like Rebbe, D'Tanya, we learned in a Brisa, Zarek V'Nachal, Gabi Ziz, Kolshehu, Rebbe Mechai V'Chachamim Potrim. If I throw something on and any protrusion, Rebbe says you're going to be Chayv, the Chachamim say you're going to be Potter. Okay? And so maybe from that, whatever that is, it's a Brisa, it's a Mishnah, it's a Brisa. From that Brisa, it sounds like, according to Rebbe, you don't need a Makom Dalet al Dalet. Now, this is not the first time that we're trying and we're struggling to find Tanayim who don't require Makom Dalet al Dalet. In fact, if you remember back, all the way back to Daf Dalet, the Gemara also over there went over various Tanayim who don't require Makom Dalet al Dalet. So included in that list of Tanayim are Rebbe Kiva and Rebbe. So it's not crazy to suggest that Rebbe happens to be of the opinion that you don't need a Makom Dalet al Dalet. Although, if you remember, back when, going back to Dal Amud Beis, we had that case, that very, very interesting case where I threw something from a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to another Rosh Hashanah Rabbim through a Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and Rebbe says you're chayiv. And if you remember, not only did Rebbe say you're chayiv, what did he say? You're chayiv twice. Once from the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim to the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, and once from the Rosh Hashanah Yachid to the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Now, do you remember what the Gemara said back over there? The Gemara says, well, maybe you threw it through a house, and Besa Keman Demaya Dami, and the house is like it's filled up. Well, that means, and that means that it did land on something, meaning it's legal something, it's not real something, but that's how these things work. And so therefore, Rebbe does in fact require an Akir Nanacha al Makom Dalet al Dalet. It's interesting because now the Gemara again is suggesting, according to Rebbe, you don't need a Makom Dalet al Dalet based on this brisa that we just learned. Amar Abaye. Now, here's how Abai is going to explain it. Now, this next two, three, four lines of Gemara are going to be a little bit tricky. Okay, and it's not totally clear what our Gemara is doing over here, what exactly the gears of the Gemara is. So what we're going to do is, and you'll permit me, we'll skip a line of Gemara. Now, I know we usually don't have a license to skip, but Just to make this next part of the discussion easy, we'll skip the next line of Gemara. Hacha bi'ilan. So what I did is I left the words Abaye in, Amar Abaye, and then I just go to the next line. Hacha bi'ilan ha'omid b'rishos yachid, v'nofa nota l'rishos harabim. This discussion, this argument over here deals with the following scenario. We're talking about the tree is standing in the rishos yachid. The branches are in the rishos harabim. Vizarg v'nach anofo, and what you did is you threw the item on a protrusion, not on just any protrusion, on the branch. Now the branch itself is not a makom dalet al dalet, but of course the branch is connected to the tree. Rebbe Savar Amrin Dinofo Basar Ikaro. What Rebbe is going to tell you is that the branch is a limb of the tree, and therefore the branch is an extension of the tree, and the tree itself, the base of the tree itself, for sure is a makom dalet al dalet, and so for this, so therefore the branch itself is also going to be a makom dalet al dalet. There are banim savrei lo armin and shdi nofo basar ikar, and the chachamim say no, I don't agree with that principle. Meaning, I look at the area that the item landed on. If the item itself landed on a makom dalet al dalet, good. If the item itself is not a makom dalet al dalet, even though it's connected to something which is makom dalet al dalet, I don't care, says the chachamim, and therefore you would not be chayev. So that's the machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim. It's a more fundamental issue of whether or not we consider the branch an extension of the tree, and since the tree is a makom dalet al dalet, so therefore we're going to give that same status to the branch as being a makom dalet al dalet.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the confusing part. The confusing part is why the Gemara has to put the tree and the branch in two different locations. And it's not a little bit of a struggle, it's a lot of a struggle why the Gemara had to do that. Okay, you could see for more discussion than that, you could Rabbi Kornfeld in his site talks about it. Whatever, you could see there's a lot more discussion on that. But right now I'm just making the discussion simple. It's a question of whether or not we give the branch the same status as the trunk. Okay. You remember, by the way, I made this point already once before. I'll make it again. Why not? The Gemara, our first case that we talked about in the Masechta was a person who was extending his hand in order to accept an item. And I think Phil also raised this issue as well. Meaning, and what happens is he collects it in his hand, and the Gemara was aghast. The Gemara says, wait a second, the hand is not a makom dala dalid. And the Gemara took a while, a daf of Gemara, to get to the point where a hand is like dala dalid. Right. Based on what the Gemara is saying over here, we could also... Right. Just like the branches, like the trunk, and the trunk is a makom dala dalid, so you could have argued, although the Gemara doesn't breathe a word of this, you could have argued, well, the hand is obviously a limb of the body. The body of a person is a makom dala dalid. So maybe then the hand should also be given the status of makom dala dalid.
You would have said the same
maybe
thing about the pole.
Well,
because I'm not dalid. I don't know about anyone else. I'm not
dala dala is not a lot. No, we're saying dala tfachim.
Yeah, tfachim. Well, that's this thing.
It's 12 inches.
Oh, you mean if I'm lying down, I'm...
Well, the lying down, but even standing up, all right, whatever. That's something where we could debate off air. But
you would have said the same thing about the previous case with the pole. The top of the pole could have been like...
Well, it could have been, but I'm saying it's interesting how the Gemara could have used that same thinking earlier, and it didn't. Amar Abaye. Now, can we get to the most complex part of today, and easily the most interesting part about today, the throwing basket. Amar Abaye, the Gemara quotes the name of Abaye, Zar Kaveris, L'Rishus HaRabim. So I take a Kaveris, I take a basket, I pick up the basket and I throw it. And I throw it into a public domain. And I threw it from a Rishus Yachid. Gvo Yud Ve'inu Rach Ravav. Now the basket's 10 Tfachim high, but it's not 6 Tfachim in diameter. Just a little bit of geometry for today. Now I have a choice. On any given circle, so you have a square inscribed in any given circle. Now, when I go from one corner to the other, so I'm doing two things. I'm looking at the hypotenuse of the square, and I'm also looking at the diameter of the circle. Now, in order for anything to be defined as a Rishus HaYachid, I'm now just looking at the area, I'm not looking at the height. So it needs to be 10 Tfachim high, but it needs to be what dimensions? 4 by 4 Tfachim. So 4 by 4 tfachim of a square is going to make a Rishus HaYachid. So now, just a little bit of geometry. If it's 4 by 4, if it's one side's 4 and the other side's 4 of a square, so what's going to be now be the hypotenuse? So that's your classic A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Okay. Pythagorean theorem. Takes us back years, huh? to the good old days. Okay. The Gemara... does this, but without the fancy math. The Gemara says that the relationship between a side and the hypotenuse is 1 to 1 2/5. Okay, that's how the Gemara puts it. So, and the Gemara says it here. The Gemara doesn't say it here. We just have to know it over here. The Gemara says it in Sukkah. The Gemara says it in Erevin. Okay. So 1 1/2. So if this is 4, so this is going to be 5.6. Okay. So then now that means that if I have any item, any circular item, which has a diameter of 5.6, it's a Rishus HaYachid. Plain and simple. Okay, it's easy. I was going to say it's easy. Now you'll notice that Abaye doesn't say 5.6. Abaye says not six. Anything less than 6. So it is a little bit confusing, and Rashi notes it, by the way. Rashi is observing that he says anything that's under 6. Well, the truth of the matter is that it doesn't have to be under 6, it has to be under 5.6 in order for it to be not a Rishus HaYachid. Rashi writes over here, right on this daf, that the Gemara just erred on the side of caution. And you'll see what I mean by that in just a moment. Let's see the Gemara inside. So I throw a kaveris, I throw a basket which into Rosh Hashanah Rabbah, which is 10 tefachim high, but it is not 6 tefachim in diameter. So now, again, let's assume, even though the Gemara says not 6, for our purposes, let's say it's not 5.6. Okay? Not trying to be difficult, but just in other words, based on the numbers that we went through. So if I throw that, I'm going to be chayev. Why? Because the basket is just an item. The basket is not a domain. It's not a rishus. Rach vavav. But once the basket now is greater than 6 in diameter, so then the basket is a rishus hayachid. And essentially what I have now done is I have thrown a rishus hayachid. Okay? And therefore I'm going to be putter. There's no Torah liability for throwing a domain. There's only a Torah liability for throwing items. Why should that be?
What if something is in the domain, like the basket?
I understand that, but the Gemara is now talking about a basket. If the baskets are the dimensions of what is a domain, which is 4 by 10, but we're just converting it to a circle, so it's 5.6 by 10, so then it's a domain.
So if you have anything in it, it's no problem.
Again, the words no problem is not the right words over here. We just simply mean you didn't violate Shabbos. Throwing it is still going to be prohibited to do, but there's no violation of Shabbos. Why not? Meaning, let's deal with a very simple issue. Why are you exempt when the basket becomes a domain, has the dimensions of a domain, so therefore you're going to be exempt for throwing it on Shabbos, even though you threw it from a Rishus HaYachid to a Rishus HaRabim? So we'll start off with Rashi. Rashi has an interesting comment over here, and Rashi writes like this. I'm reading the Rashi of Rach Vavav. If it's 6 tefachim, it would be pater. Da'ave rishus la'atzma. The basket is its own domain. V'anar mimishkan gamrinan. You know where we learned all our malachas from. All the malachas are learned from the Mishkan. Shayu zorkin machtem b'machtan zelazeh. Now in the Mishkan, what would they throw each other? They would throw needles at each other. Now, in general, doesn't sound that pleasant. In fact, when we get to the Gemara later on, the Gemara is going to discuss this, and you'll see where Rashi got this idea of throwing needles at one another. But just the simple point that Rashi's making is that they were throwing items at one another. V'lo hayuzurkin rishuyos. And they would not throw rishuyos at one another. And so therefore, throwing a domain was not found in the Mishkan, therefore it's not a malacha. So says Rashi. Okay?
Big things they didn't throw?
Yeah, meaning anything that now is big enough where it's its own domain, there's no liability, there's no Torah liability for throwing such an item. Right. Okay. Tosfos has a different understanding of why you're exempt. Tosfos writes very simply, take a look at Rach v'Shisha Pater. Tosfos writes, "Akaveres atzma nasis rishus hayachid kishatanuach, v'avi kazarek mirishus hayachid lirishus hayachid derech rishus harabim de Pater." Ingenious. I mean, Rashi also says it. I mean, everything's interesting over here. Tosfos says something ingenious. Look, the basket is the rishus hayachid. I picked it up in the rishus hayachid. Good. I threw the basket. So while in the air, it's now going through a rishus harabim. When the basket lands, now what is the basket? Again, assuming it's the dimensions of 10 by 6. It's the rishus hayachid. So now what did I do? Sum total of what I accomplished. I threw from a rishus hayachid. It ended in a rishus hayachid. Now when I say in a rishus hayachid, the basket formed the rishus hayachid, and I threw it through a rishus harabim.
And what happens to klota?
Let's leave klota out of it. No, it's a fair question. It's already as it is. It's already complex enough, and so therefore I threw from rishus hayachid to rishus hayachid through rishus harabim. That's not a malacha. Okay, that is how Tosos understands. Why you're going to be exempt over here. So Rashi's explanation is that they didn't have throwing domains in the Mishkan. Tosfos says, no, just look at what occurred. Rishus HaYachid, to a Rishus Yachid through a Rishus Rabbin. There's just simply no malacha that was accomplished. Okay, let's go back to the Gemara. So, Chai Rechva Vav Pater. Rava Amar Afilo Einu Rechva Vav Pater. Now, Rava says, no, you know what? I think even if the barrel, if the barrel is less than 6, or if you'd like to say less than 5.6, you're still going to be exempt. My time, my yafshal akrumi shal kana shalo yalo lamala me'asara. Because the baskets were not manufactured in a factory. In other words, there are going to be some of the vertical
reeds
of the basket that are going to be higher than 10 tefachim. So assuming that the basket landed vertically, so some of the reeds are going to be extending above 10 tefachim. Now this is also interesting. What Abaye now is arguing is the... what Rava now is arguing is that because some of the reeds are going to be above 10 tefachim, not the entire reed has entered into the Rishus HaRabim. Some of it is extended above, and therefore you'd be Pater. In order to be Chayiv of a transfer in Shabbos, it has to be the entire item is being transferred in its entirety from a Rishus Yachid to a Rishus HaRabim. But if some of the item is not been transferred, so then Minatari, you're not going to be Chayiv. So says Rav. Period. Now, Abaye disagrees with Rava, even though you don't see that inside in the Gemara, but it's clear, because Abaye didn't make such a distinction. Rashi points out, it's a little bit later, Rashi points out, why does Abaye disagree? Because just for a couple of reeds that are above 10 tefachim, it's hard to now argue, well, you know, not all the basket went into the Rishus HaRabim. Some of it extended. It's so, you want to throw around the term like bittel. Like, it's not a significant enough part of the basket that is above 10 tefachim. Okay, that would be our explanation of why Abaye would disagree with Rava. That's Rashi's explanation. Now, Kafa al Pia, Shiva Uma. Okay, now, let's say I throw the basket, same basket now again. Now, this basket is bigger than 6, less than 6, unclear. Rashi has a very clear position. Rashi says that it's not 6 tefachim. Okay, either way, Tosfos disagrees. Again, as it is, it's already complicated enough. We don't need to make it any more complicated. We could. Kafa apia. I turn the basket upside down, and I throw the basket now upside down. So now, basically, what this basket is a mini hut. I mean, really mini. And Shiva Umashu, and let's say the height of the basket now is 7 tefachim. And let's give it even a little bit more, 7 and a mashu. So Chayiv, so you would be Chayiv. Okay. Shiva Umechza, but the basket is 7.5 tefachim high. Really, really tiny basket, meaning, not tiny, but I'm saying, hard to view it as a house. 7.5 tefachim high. But according to Abaye, you would be Pater. Why? 7.5 tefachim high, threw it from a Rishus Yachid to a Rishus HaRabim, it landed upside down, so that means, of course, is that the base is now on the top, so you would be Pater. So the reason why, I'm sorry, the base is, the rim is up. Right, the rim, no.
The rim is down.
Sorry, the rim is down. So you would be Pater. Now why? So we're going to invoke an idea over here that we spoke about earlier. And now it's a very interesting invocation of the principle of Lavud. Lavud means that if something is within 3 tefachim of something else, we fill in the gap. Now, this is going to be a little bit strange and certainly hard for me to explain. But because the top of the basket now is 7.5 tefachim, and because the Rishus HaRabim ceiling is 10 tefachim, so we're going to fill in the gap. Right. Now I understand and I know that there's no real gap over here, meaning because there's nothing above, in other words, the ceiling of the Rishus HaRabim is a legal ceiling. It's not a real ceiling. In fact, as we pointed out before, if it were a real ceiling, it wouldn't be a Rishus HaRabim. So it's a legal ceiling, but because the distance between the top of the barrel and the legal ceiling of the Rishus Rabbim is less than 3 tefachim, much less, meaning it's 7.5 tefachim tall. It's only 2.5 tefachim from the top, so therefore you would be pater, you'd be exempt. Good. Because why? Because now some of the barrel is above 10 tefachim. Now Rav Ashi Amar Afilu Shivo Mechza Chayav Maitam Mechitzos L'Sochen Asuyos. Now Rav Ashi will disagree over here very simply, because look, what are you talking about? The walls, we're going to say Lavud to the top. First of all, those walls are made for the interior of the barrel. Those walls aren't meant to extend upwards. So Rav Ashi says he doesn't believe that. In other words, he believes in Lavud. That's not the issue. It's the application of Lavud, in this case over here, that he simply doesn't subscribe to. Okay. So again, 5 lines of Gemara, which we only scratched the surface of these 5 lines. Throwing a basket into a Rishus HaRabim. So again, we talked about the basket itself being a domain, being a Rishus HaYachid. So if the basket is greater than 6 Tfachim, it's its own domain, it's its own Rishus HaYachid. And so therefore, if I threw it into a Rishus HaRabim, it might be Pater. Why? Machlokes in our Gemara between Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says because they didn't throw domains in the Mishkan. Tosfos says no, because once it lands, it becomes a Rishus HaYachid. Good. Throwing a basket that's less than 6 but vertically higher than 7.5 tefachim, are we ready to employ the principle of Lavud so that now part of the basket is above the 10 tefach ceiling of the Rishus HaRabim? That's a machlokus between Abaye and Rav Ashi, and we move on in the Gemara. Amar Ula Amar Tisha B'Rishus HaRabim. Let's say I have a small little pillar in the Rishus HaRabim. And how are we going to view that small little pillar in a Rishus HaRabim? Okay, so again, let's make sure that we're clear about what's going on right now. We're walking through a Rishus HaRabim. Anytime I drop an item on the floor, I deposit the item on the Rishus HaRabim. Okay. What if I have a little bench in the Rishus HaRabim? Remember, what do we say about that bench? It's a Carmelis. Mm-hmm. Right. Because the bench is 4x4, less than 10, higher than 3, it's a Carmelis. Now, we're going to talk about a pillar in a Rishus HaRabim. Okay? Not the best example, but kind of like the parking meter. Okay, it's really not a good example. Huh?
Just a concrete post.
It's a post in the Rishus HaRabim. So, Ula says like this. The public use it. Mechatvin alav. In fact, what they do is that the public is going to walk right past this 9 tefach post, is that they're going to take off their package, put it down on the package, and then put it back on again, and they'll use it to help shift the item that they're carrying. People use it, the public use it. Therefore, this post is part of the Rishus HaRabim. It is a Rishus HaRabim. V'zarech v'nacha agabav chai maitama. And he goes on to explain. Pachos mishlosha mishlosh tarsi l'rabim. Look, any item in the street, which is lower than 3 tefachim, people walk on it. It's part of the street. It's obviously part of the Rishus HaRabim. Mishosha v'atisha lo midras darsi l'rabim v'lo chatve mechatve. And anything from 3 to 9 is just an obstruction in the street. And so therefore, it's not a Rishus HaRabim.
Nobody uses it.
People walk around it. It's not a Rishus HaRabim. Tisha, but once it's 9, vada mechatve nelaveh. The Gemara says with confidence, vada mechatve nelaveh. People for sure use it. And therefore, it's part of the Rishus HaRabim. So says Ula. Okay, now Amar Lei Abaye. Okay, it's really an interesting concept. And by the way, if it were higher than 10 tefachim, what then would it be? Well,
or Makam
Patur. Yeah, I would go with Makam Patur. Makam Patur would be my vote. Because it's not 4x4.
It's not 4x4.
It's higher than 10 tefachim. So it's in a Makam Patur. The top of it, I would say, is a makam pater. Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef. Guma, my. Good. So now that we've established that a post in the Rishus HaRabim of exactly 9 tefachim is a Rishus HaRabim, what about a hole in the Rishus HaRabim that's 9 tefachim deep? Now, if I were the one being asked, which clearly that wouldn't be the case, if I would be the one being asked, I'd say that's Bor B'Rishus HaRabim. That's not something that the public uses. That's something that the public would probably hate and not use. And the Gemara, interestingly enough, over here argues
for this
stuff. Yeah, that people use it. People put stuff in it. Okay, I don't fully understand, but that's my problem. Amar lei v'chein beguma. So Ula says, I'm sorry, this is a conversation between Abai and Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef says, same thing, same story. Just like a post of nine tefachim is part of the Rosh Hashanah Rabim, so too is a hole, a pit of nine tefachim part of the Rosh Hashanah Rabim.
Okay.
People would use it.
No, they would deposit it.
They'd deposit things in it. The public would use it. Since it services the public, it therefore is part of the Rosh Hashanah Rabim. Rav Amar Begum Alam. So, and Rava says, no, my time is Tashmish, I did Chak, Lo Shmei Tashmish. People may use it, but no one's using it with any type of frequency. And only if there's no other place in the street to deposit something, then and only then are they going to use it. That's not enough in order for it to be considered now part of the terrain of the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Ezver Rav Adar Bar Masna LaRava, the Gemara goes on the attack of Rava. Haisa Kupasa Monachas Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Gvora Sarah Verachva Dalin. Ain Metalta Lomitocha Rishos Harabim Vlom Rishos Harabim Lasocha. Once I have a box, dimensions of 4x4 and 10 Tfachim, you know what that box is now? It's a Rishos Hayachid. I can't transfer from the Rishos Harabim to the box, nor from the box to the Rishos Harabim. Pachos Mikan. But once the box is less than that, Metaltalin, then I can make any transfer I want. Now, wait a second. The box is less than 10 tefachim. Isn't it a karmelis? You're now hearing it for the second time this mesechta. You're hearing it from Rashi. Last time you heard it from Tosfos. Now you're hearing it from Rashi. Second to last Rashi on the Amud. Hai v'chein. No, sorry. Third to last Rashi on the Amud. Pachos mikan. Ib obegova oberochav mitautalin. V'im tomer. I'm reading Rashi. Pachos miyud v'rach v'dalek. Karmelis he? Lo gazer rabbanan livtule mitaros kelim hol v'klihu. A kli is not a karmelis. A kli cannot become a karmelis. A karmelis is only a structure. But once you have a kli, it doesn't and cannot become a karmelis. So therefore, once the box's dimensions are anything less than 10 by 4, 10 tefachim high, 4 by 4 in width, so therefore, it's nothing. It's simply nothing. V'chein beguma, and the same thing is true regarding a guma, regarding a hole in the ground. Now, when it says v'chein beguma, what is it talking about? My lava seifa is not talking about the seifa, which would then indicate that I would not be able to transfer to this guma. Lo, aresha, no, it's going on the resha. Meaning, we're not talking about a pit that's 9 tefachim deep. We're talking about a pit that's 10 tefachim deep. And a pit that's 10 tefachim deep and 4x4 wide is a Rosh Hashanah Yachin, Eisvei. The Gemara challenges again. We're now on the top of Chesam and Beis. Niskav l'shpos b'Rosh Hashanah Rabim, v'inich eruva b'bor l'malam yud tfachim. Eruva, eruv. Now, before we go any further, I got to give words of introduction. Permit me, please. In order to, we're going to do a lot of this in Erevin. Outside of the city, I can't go beyond 2,000 amas. Okay, it's called Tchum Shabbos. I'm sure you've heard about this once or twice before. So as a result of Tchum Shabbos, so if I'm living in a city, north, south, east, or west, I'm limited. I can only walk up until 2,000 amas. Imagine that I would like to, however, walk beyond 2,000 amas. There's a way to do so. And that is by setting up what's called an Erev Tchum. An Erev Tchum is very simple. It's not magical. It basically, what it forces me to do is to move my point of center. Meaning that right now I'm living in the city, so my point of center is in the city. So therefore, 2,000 amas here, 2,000 amas here, 2,000 amas here. On Erev Shabbos, what I'll do on Friday afternoon is I'll go, let's say, to the east, 2,000 amas. I will then set up a small little dinner for myself. Tray table, dinner, and I will then establish that to be my makom shvisa. Now, when does it kick in, so to say? Bein HaShmashos. Bein HaShmashos now Friday evening, so now that becomes my point of center. So now I'm on the extreme west side of my Eruv, So now what I do is I walk 2,000 amos now to my Erev Tchum, and now it affords me an opportunity to walk another 2,000 amos. And that is the story behind the Erev Tchum. Absolutely. Because there's no magic in the Erev Tchum. Right, I lose my original Tchum, I now adopt it. Now the story of the Tchum is a very simple story. Is that during the Bein Hashemashos period, I have to be able to access my Erev Tchum. Now I don't mean physically, I mean legally. Meaning understand that it only kicks in Bein Hashemashos of Shabbos. So that means that from a halachic standpoint, that Tchum has to be accessible to me. So if let's say I'm in a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and my Tchum, my little tray table of bread and a dip. If my tray table is not in a place where I can access it on Shabbos during the Bein Hashemashos period, the Tchum will not work. Okay? Those are your ground rules. Niskaven Lishpos Birishos Rabbim. So let's say I wanted to make my Makum Shvisa, my new central location, in a Rishos Rabbim. Okay, you could do that. In other words, you're entitled to make your point of center wherever you want. V'inich eruv ha-bebor. And what did you do? You put your eruv in a pit. And so now, your makom shvisa is at the edge of the pit, in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, but you place the food in the pit. Wasn't your smartest move, but fine. So miyutfachim eruv eruv, v'lamata miyutfachim ein eruvo eruv. And so it depends where exactly you put your Erev Tchum.
But you have access to it though?
Huh?
You have access to it inside the pit?
Sure. But now the problem is the following. If it's below 10 Tvachim, you can't get it. If it's above 10 Tvachim, then you can get it. Now the Gemara says, now I didn't explain this well, and for good reason, because the Gemara is going to do that right now. Hey Chidami. Now, wait a second. Where? How deep is this pit? Ilema bebordi is be'asara olamala the dali ve'osve lamata the tasayva osve. Are we talking about where the pit is 10 tefachim deep, and it's just a question of where in the pit I put the food? The Gemara says, what difference does it make? Mali lamala, mali lamata. Hu b'makom acher ve'iruva b'makom acher. Hu b'makom acher hu. If you put the food in the pit, the food now is in Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Your makom shvisa was right at the edge of the pit, which is the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. You can't get your food. You can't pick up your food. That's called transferring. That's a malacha on Shabbos.
But the edge of the pit is not preserved in the pit itself.
Right. For the purpose of this discussion, yes. So it must be that the pit in question is less than 10 tefachim. Viketani eruvo eruv. And meanwhile, it says that your Erev is a good Erev. It Almam, what do we see over here? Tashmish Ayideh Chach, Shmei Tashmish. So you see over here that because the pit is 9 Tfachim deep, and you put the food in the pit, and you designated your Makom Shvisa to be at the edge of the pit, you're good. Meaning you're in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and your food's in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. So this indicates, not like what Rava wanted to argue, this indicates that the pit in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, that's less than 10 Tfachim deep, is considered part of the Rishus HaRabim. I know that was a very complicated proof, but if you've been following, it works. So it does indicate that. Now, Zimna Mishan Lehu Ve'ruva Be'Karmelis. So the Gemara says, look, I could suggest to you that we're not talking about a Rishus HaRabim, we're talking about a Karmelis. V'amai Karmelis Rishus HaRabim. Now, why did the Mishnah use the words Rishus HaRabim? L'fishen Rishus HaYachin. Just simply to indicate that it's not a Rishus HaYachin. So that's one response I can give to you in terms of deflecting the proof. It's not really Rishus HaRabim, it's really Karmelis. Don't get thrown off by the fact that the Mishnah uses the words Rishus HaRabim.
Why
Karmelis? It's just what, in other words, that's just simply the case. In other words, he's just deflecting the proof. And he doesn't want the Mishnah to be talking about a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, so therefore he's just reinterpreting the Mishnah. It's not a strong answer, right? But it is a deflection. V'zimna mishamna lehu b'Rosh Hashanah Rabbim ve'eruva b'karmelis. Or what we could say is the following: no, the pit's not a Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. You know what the pit is? It's a karmelis. So the Gemara says, well, if the pit's a karmelis, so then how in the world would I be able to transfer the food from where I'm standing, which is the edge of the pit, which is a Rishus HaRabim, from the pit, which is a Karmelist? You can't transfer from a Karmelist to Rishus HaRabim. Rebbe, he, according to Rebbe, you're allowed to. Remember why? Because Rebbe's of the opinion that during the Bein Hashmashos period, you're allowed to violate Isurei Derabanan. We're going to talk more about this throughout the Masechta. Right, this is the position of Rebbe, which, by the way, we adopt. You're allowed to violate Isurei Derabanan during the Bein Hashmashos period. So if all my transfer of the Erev requires is a transfer from a Karmelist to Rishus HaRabim, which is only an Isurei Derabanan, Bein Hashmashos, you're allowed to do that. And by the way, that's when you acquire your Erev, during the Bein Hashmashos period. So if the only thing which is prohibiting you from your Erev is an Isurei Derabanan, that's okay. And what are you going to tell me now? You're giving forced answers? No. Eladavka kamin lachted none. We learned in the Mishnah. Imhaya rakak maim rishos harabim malachas bo. If I have a puddle and the rishos harabim is going through the puddle, hazorik lasocha dal amos chayiv. If I throw into it 4 amos, I'd be chayiv. Kamihi rakak maim. We say a puddle. What are we talking about? Pachos mi yitvachim. Virakak maim she rishos harabim malachas bo hazorik lasocha dal amos chayiv. Now bishlam rakak rakak trei zimne. Now that was sound a little bit repetitive. So why did it say the word rakak 2 times? Chad b'yamosek chamim v'chad b'yamosek shamim. One during the rainy season, one during the dry season. It's tricha. D'yashmin b'yamosek chamim David in shalukuri nafshayu. People love going into the puddle during the hot summer. Aval b'yamosek shamim emalo, but not during the rainy season. V'yashmin b'yamosek shamim agav demetanav mikarev v'nachis. During the rainy season, everyone's muddy. People love the puddle during the rainy season because it cleans them off. Aval b'yamosek chamalo. So tricha ela hiloch trei zimna lamali. But why does it say the word hiloch 2 times? Ela lav shmamina hiloch ayideat chak shme hiloch tashmish ayideat chak lo shme tashmish. Because if I have something which presents a little bit of an obstacle to the public, that's not a big deal. But something which is used only very infrequently by the public, that's not considered part of the public domain. So shmamina. So what you see from here is that if I have a hole in the Rishus HaRabim, people use it, but only at times and not with any type of frequency. It does not. It is not part of the Rishus HaRabim. So even though the pole in the Rishus HaRabim of 9 tefachim is considered part of the Rishus HaRabim, the hole in the Rishus HaRabim that's 9 tefachim deep is not considered part of the Rishus HaRabim. Okay. Tough today. I'll be the first one to admit it. It's a very tough daf today. If you have a chance, go over it again. If you have a chance, come tonight. You get to hear the daf again. Or if you want, you can even listen online.